Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, before we delve into things, I just want to tell you about our Liverpool streaming service. It is Redmen Plus. Get involved over there for extra Redmen shows in video form, in podcast form. You've got documentaries, features, interviews, and a hell of a lot more besides. If you join as a club legend, you get the Discord chat, you'll get free merchandise and a host of extra bonus perks. It's like Netflix for Liverpool fans. Get over there, get involved. Otherwise, let's face it, you're going to miss out on amazing Liverpool stuff in your life. Hey everyone, it's Redmen Podcast time. I'm Paul Machin, Steve Hoare, Chris Pajak in with me, the dream team.
Feels like it's been a while, has it?
I don't think it's been, I mean, it's been a week maybe.
No, it feels longer. Cause it? Yeah, because you were away for a little bit as well.
Yeah.
Maybe a
couple of hours. I've been here. Yeah. I've been here. So, okay. Feels like forever.
Excuse Chris while he plasters on a smile and goes through this one more time. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, loads of stuff to get through on the podcast today. We're going to be talking about whether this is truly the end of an era at Liverpool Football Club. It's been speculated around that at the end of a cycle for the football team, but now with real huge moves happening behind the scenes, both from the ownership perspective and then actually a lot of the football people that sit between the ownership and the people on the pitch moving on and handing the notice in as well. Massive changes afoot for Liverpool. We're going to talk about that and what that all means. We're also going to talk about Liverpool having a new doctor for about 4 seconds because ultimately, you know.
Was that it?
It might prove to be it. And then it's today, as we are filming this, it is the anniversary.
What's interesting is they find that it's difficult to get an appointment with a doctor as we do. Which is fucking nice, isn't it, to be fair?
Even if you're a $3 billion company, getting hold of a doctor can be hard.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's it.
Yeah, well, that's probably why they've gone with a British fella in the end, like, you mean? Because I don't have to get work permits and all that kind of stuff. Yes, and it is the anniversary of Steven Gerrard's debut for the Mighty Reds, so we're going to be talking about him, and we're going to be creating the definitive top five Steven Gerrard goal rank of all time.
The top five Steven Gerrard goal rank of all time?
Yeah.
Cool, I like it.
I can see that doing numbers with that title.
So if you've got suggestions for what you think...
Goal rank!
If you've got suggestions for what you think Steven Gerrard's best ever goal is. In fact, if you want to do your top five live in the comments, then you can do as well. If you're watching this elsewhere, then you can join us on YouTube for this. We have got a kickoff question. It comes from Steve O'Hare. It says, if you could own one piece of historical footballing memorabilia to keep, not to sell, what would it be? So, like, obviously, you could go and get the Jules Rimet trophy from 1966. And then just sell it and be dead rich. Yeah, but it's something you want to keep, something that'll be meaningful to you.
Funny answer. Arsenal's gold Premier League trophy. That'll shut them off, won't it? Ours is missing, is what they'd be fucking saying.
There's loads of photos of you holding up.
The real answer is probably a little strange, but it's one of the reasons that I sort of fell in love with Liverpool. I remember watching this on the telly and all that back in the, I think it was late 80s, it might have been 1990 or whatever, but you know, when John Aldridge threw his fucking shirt and his socks and his boots into the crowd after the Palace 9-0, that would be probably the thing that maybe means the most to me, which is madness because, you know, I only saw him for a year or two and obviously you've seen the videos and everything else, but that was part of the reason that I think I kind of fell in love with Liverpool.
What a mad moment that is, because I remember
made the news and being shown that on replays and all that kind of stuff for Yonks afterwards.
Took his boots off and his socks.
Basically ends up basically naked walking off the pitch. And it's, would footballers do that? I know footballers are a bit more willy-nilly and giving out shirts these days. You know, everyone gives them away to a kid in the stands.
I don't think they're whipping the shorts off.
Yeah, less so. Someone did that not too long ago, didn't he? But less so. But for a moment like that, I wonder if Aldo like regrets not having that shirt. You know, like, you know, it's a great moment, a pure John Aldridge moment. Scouse hero, burnt shortly but brightly at Liverpool. But that idea of just being lost in the moment and giving something to the fans is just so Aldo. But I wonder whether footballers would, if you knew that was going to be your last shirt at your boyhood club, I'm not sure I would be chucking that. I certainly wouldn't be chucking that.
He's a minimalist.
Yeah,
maybe that's it.
Yeah, but his wife's dead happy. You know what I mean? Like, yeah.
Where's he leave to? Was he go off to Spain?
Sashi dad.
I wonder if he just couldn't be arsed packing a suitcase full of kits. Just might just fucking give them away. Like, you know what I mean? The luggage charges. There was no easier carry on them, was there?
There was so much emotion. The whole thing from him, wasn't it? You know, the fact that it was his boyhood club.
The washing
and everything
machine
else.
Was packed up already.
I just thought it was brilliant, to be honest with you.
Yeah. All those 89.
I'd go more modern from that one. I would go the ball from the Barca 4-0. The actual ball. I think I'd like. I wouldn't mind that one. I know it's multi-ball, and I know it probably wasn't the same one, but the one that
the ball that was thrown in for the corner.
Yeah, the corner taken quickly, a Rigi goal one. I'd love to have that one. I'd try and get Trent and Divock to sign it if I could as well.
Yeah,
I think that'd be an amazing piece because that goal is gonna like there'll be lads doing the version of this or girls doing a version of this in like 50 years time, and they'll still be talking about like that, one of the most famous goals of all time is that one, and it'd be nice that because not only is it something like of our era that reminds you of it, it's gonna be worth millions. It's gonna be, you know, one of the most memorable goals of all time. It's up there already, isn't it? We talk about top goals and stuff. So I think I'd try and get Divock and Trent to sign that for me.
If I could NFT a moment in time, so like you chop that moment in time out and you get to have it in front of you to relive forever and ever and ever, it's the ball boy flicking the V's at Lionel Messi on the pitch at the end of that 4-0 is one of the most is my. One of the few moments that makes me so proud to be Scouse.
Is your piece of memorabilia the ball boy? You just want to own the ball
boy. I want to own that moment. I want to be able to go into put a VR headset on and go and view that from every possible angle.
Nice.
And really like do one playthrough and I'm just looking at Messi's face and looking at, you know, and see and look at every detail of his face when he realised.
Yeah, if you get anywhere, you'd be in the ball boy's eyes, wouldn't you? Seeing what he saw.
Well, like Jamie Carragher.
No one's got that though, have they? Like, you know what I mean? And Messi's face when he realises that like a 15-year-old Scouse lad is flicking in the fucking bees would be glorious.
So you scored one of the greatest free kicks the world's ever seen. You've beaten Liverpool 3-0 in the new camp, and then you've gone and gotten trounced. And
by a 15-year-old.
Yeah, I'd want it like Pez replays, probably FIFA replays, where you can shift to the perspective of everyone within the stadium. Everyone who has eyes on that, I want to be able to see it from their view and perspective, because that is one of the finest Liverpoolian moments in all of us.
Can I just say, any of the Barcelona fans who sent me death threats or bomb threats to my house after I tweeted the picture of said incident, this was all Paul's idea. Do not get in touch with me, because I
Yeah, you can get in touch with me, stay at theredmentv.com.
You can afford emails to me? That's a fucking new thing, isn't it? Like, you would have thought that was going to happen at some point? It redirects to me anyway.
Obviously, in terms of a piece of actual footballing memorabilia, it's really tough.
I got used to Dan's autograph at a present.
You did? You know what? Funnily enough, that's come up back up in our house again recently. We've been.
Was it his goal in the Champions League final?
Yeah.
It's a good piece of memorabilia.
It's a good piece of memorabilia. Like, but I'd rather have like
the ball,
or a shirt, or whatever. From
fucking hell.
Could you take Baggio's Divine Pony? Oh, there's a piece of memorabilia. That's a brilliant one. Yeah. Ronaldo R9's little bit at the front from 2002.
Ooh, Ronaldo's boots from France 98.
The Nike Mercurial ones.
Yeah. They were like space age boots for the time.
I imagine the doctor like who was bringing them back to life or something like 10 minutes before the final. I might have nicked those or I don't know. Mm. But if all the rumours are to be believed, they were
well,
like
the guy with Michael Jackson probably got his white socks off at the point where they were. Something like that, or maybe like I don't know. It's just a bit simple, but like Gerard Istanbul shirt.
You're into like collecting tats as well. You're a big hoarder.
Oh god, yeah, huge. Yeah,
like, I don't get the whole memorabilia thing. It doesn't bother me really. But I can imagine
you
would love like a coat. Well, we have got
that's
one.
That's why you can't decide.
Yeah, because there's so much. And also, like, this studio is.
I have dreams. I have dreams about like doing supermarket sweeps. You know what I mean? Like, of going to like places where you genuinely like,
classic football shirt.
Yeah, 100%. I've been to classic football shirt, and it is my dream place. It is like an Aladdin's cave. An Aladdin's warehouse of every football shirt ever. Yeah, I do. I get like
that was a good question though.
Yeah, it was a good question. Thanks so much to Steve O'Hare for that one. But yeah, on that is because I like tangibility. Things carry memories, and I think it helps if it's something you actually owned. But there's just something to like the touch and the smell and the shape and the feel of like the fact. It's why I don't like the remakes of the old footy shirts, because the material's wrong on them, and it annoys me because you don't get that same, doesn't spark the memory. You can if you touch a piece of material that you touched when you were 13, something in your brain carries that, and it takes you back there, which is a really cool vibe. Okay, cool. We're going to be talking more retro vibes on Gerrard a little bit later on. We will be discussing the end of the year at next at Anfield, but we have got a very short break. It is Cyber Monday. Yesterday, but we're carrying a Cyber Monday offer all this week. Here's some details on that.
Hey everyone, we've got a great deal for you this week. Black Friday is gone, but it is Cyber Monday week. So if you sign up to Red Men Plus as a yearly club captain and enter the code Cyber Monday, all one word in capitals, you'll get 30% off. So come and get some amazing Red Men content for 30% off. Works out saving you about 15 quid. So yeah, redmenplus.com, sign up as a yearly club captain, enter the code Cyber Monday, and come and get some amazing Liverpool content in your eyes and in your ears.
Hey, welcome back. Sorry, just for reference, you want to just tell the audience what you said you look like there?
I sound like Perry Saturn, the wrestler, on that one.
Yeah, if anyone gets that reference, give yourselves a huge pat on the back. Very early 2000s wrestling reference there.
Fellu- oh, that's why I don't know it. I would have thought I'd have known it early 2000s.
You shouldn't have. That was when we were playing SmackDown on the multi-tap heavily.
Do you remember when like the WWE signed like four guys from WCW on the same day? They signed Chris Benoit, Eddie Guerrero.
Yes.
Dean Malenko and Perry Saturn. Perry Saturn was in that group.
Right.
And then he fell in love with a mop.
Wow. Okay.
But he was bald.
Is that because that had hair?
He was bald with a beard. Yeah, maybe that's what it was. Maybe he just wanted hair. Yeah. But I was just looking at that advert then, and I thought I look a little bit like Perry Saturn, which was an odd reference to go to, really. But
no way near as orange.
He was a very orange man, yeah.
Yeah. I just looked him up in the break as well, and you know, facially you might look like him.
Yeah, listen,
Headly, you might look like him. But not bodily.
Rate right. Out of 10, how much Steve looks like Perry Saturn. In fact, can we have a one shot or put him on the two shot for us, please, Aaron? Just flex. Nailed it. Absolutely nailed it, in fact, for completeness sake.
Get me a mop. As if we've got a mop in here. Fucking hell.
We don't have a mop because they leave a fucking river of water on the floor. If you had a mop, it wouldn't be fucking wet when I come in every fucking Tuesday and Friday morning.
Hang on a second, I need to get...
That was a passive-aggressive shout. That was our cleaners there.
That wasn't passive. That was just aggressive, Steve.
Straight out open warfare. Right, in fact, Aaron, can we get the picture of Perry Saturn up? And yeah. Then, can we cut to Steve, please?
And then back again. And again, quicker.
Sorry.
Apologies, podcast
listeners. Yeah, Google Perry Saturn,
and then, yeah. Steve does
you may as well Google the podcast.
Yeah. Wow, I didn't expect that. Took a turn.
Who the four Perry Saturn would have got an early door shout out on the show?
Yeah.
Got longer than the club doctor.
After 4 months of finally filled the Bacon Club Doctor role as Perry Saturn, former WCW renegade, turned WWF heel. And also, actually, Scott Hawks with $25 in the Super Chat. Thank you, Scott. You awesome human. Says, nice Bill Hicks reference, Paul. As always.
Missed that one.
I didn't get it.
Plaster on a smile and plough through this shit one more time.
You've said it that often, I now think it's just yours.
yeah, I've co-opted that, is it? Yeah.
I know it's off top. I've never watched any of the comic book like stuff.
Oh, mate, it's amazing.
Yeah.
I need to?
Yeah.
Okay. It's on my to-do list. It's not going to get done.
Alec Maltese.
Everything else on your to-do list.
Falcon. I would keep a match ball from 2005 Champions League final or a match worn Liverpool shirt from that game. Yeah. Is it? Would it be Gerrard, by the way, if you had to pick? If you had to pick one player's shirt from the Istanbul game?
Yes. Or Duda.
Or Carragher.
You love Jamie Carragher, though.
Yeah. And also all the cramp and everything, and like, you know what I mean.
You want Jamie Carragher, and the long sleeves look cool, don't they, as well? It's the iconic one, Gerrard or Duda, I suppose. But yeah, that's a good one. Again, the thing with match balls, though, and going back to it, it's like it's because they use this multi-ball system now. It's not really the match ball, is it? It's a match ball from one of 50 balls or something.
So you're one that you value. Want to guarantee the one that Gerrard did the yeah that was the one, because it's technically got like the remnants of Gerrard's forehead sweat on it, and that's pure PR history. That isn't it?
That might come up later, mightn't it?
It might.
Teaser for the show.
Ooh.
Audience retention.
Stay tuned. Drama. Right, okay. Let's do the boring real life stuff, because it's what a weird world that we're in at the moment. The whole office, I found, has actually been quite happy in the last week or two, and it's because Toffee TV are doing live streams of World Cup games and just rekindling their love of football. We've all basically stopped watching football or have it on in the background. We've had a few background games on, caught a few goals and a few bits and pieces, but everyone's generally more chill and having some breathing room and stuff. I kind of feel a bit like that. We haven't got Liverpool to ruin our weeks at the moment, which they've been doing quite a lot so far this season, but I've had to switch off. It's been part of this, Chris, is because I've said plenty of times, I don't want to get drawn into the takeover stuff too much, but I am a little concerned about that. And when you see the guy who was brought in as the heir apparent to Michael Edwards, who we all know is a pivotal part of Liverpool's success, deciding after less than a year in his role that he wants out. We know that Mike Gordon's moving up to handle takeover stuff. And now Ian Graham, who to most fans will be unfamiliar, but we know to be a central part of the analytics team behind the scene at Liverpool, and more to go as well. It does feel like everything that Liverpool have been built on over the last, the Klopp era, is kind of, I don't know whether it's unravelling implies like it's all falling apart, but it could be, or it could be part of the next evolution, but it certainly doesn't, until more information presents itself, it doesn't look good.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think when you think back to what FSG wanted to put in place at Liverpool Football Club, the data science department, the data research, the recruitment side of things, that's all changed. That was what FSG have not only built Liverpool Football Club on, but they built Boston Red Sox on. So that says to me that FSG aren't taking this club forward, because that's their model, and their model's gone right now. There's no talk of who's going to do it. I did a show yesterday with Josh Williams at Distance Covered, a senior football writer at Reach, who is bang into all of this stuff over on Plus, and it's absolutely brilliant, really eye-opening stuff. And he was talking about his fears for this as well, and I share those fears, because what made Liverpool so good over the last 10 years is the recruitment. It is gaining an advantage in the transfer market, and the people who've put that in place aren't at the football club anymore. So if FSG are going to take this club forward, they would have replacements. There's no word on who the replacements are. One of the things that I didn't know that Josh taught me yesterday on the show was that part of Ian Graham's team, four of them are essentially Welsh guys. Ian Graham's a Welsh guy as well. Number five is Will Spearman, the rocket scientist. So these are guys that he believes that, you know, Ian Graham kind of grew up with, maybe went to university with, developed our analytics department with. And if they're a really close-knit 4-5-person team, if Ian Graham's going, do the rest of them go? And just like in any other walk of life, I used this on the show yesterday, actually, Paul. I said, look, we had a website built in 2011. It was completely coded by one fella at a group up in near St. Helens. And this was before WordPress. You take that to somebody else and you look at it and go, I can't read that.
Yeah.
That's what Liverpool may well be in. We've got the most experienced person in football in that role who's just left us. The person who's been doing it since 2005, 2006, longer than anybody else in world football, he has just left his role at our football club. He was the pioneer, described to me yesterday as the Guardiola or the Klopp of the data sphere in this football industry, has just left. How do you replace the best with somebody else on a system that was written buy the best.
You'd like to hope. I'll be honest, that kind of the stuff, I'm not that bothered by. Because I think you can find... I think they might... Because they keep... They're insisting the model's not changing. They're going to hire a new sport.
The model might not change, but how you interpret and how you read the model is what those people are there for.
That's why they're
the best.
I get it.
Because everyone's got the numbers. Every football club around the world's got the numbers that they're looking at. But it's how you interpret that and put that into points on the pitch.
I've always just thought they'll do a little what they did with Julian Ward and just bring the next guy up, which is kind of what you're meant to do. Like, listen, we've been through changes here as a business, and you've that's just part of it. You hope that the structure is sound enough that it doesn't matter, but like it looks after itself. So the sporting director thing, I'm not that bothered by. I'll be honest. I think you can just go and get another sporting director. The data thing is a worry, but again, I'd like to think that it depends where they're going. My worry is, and just in the back of my head a little bit, is that have they had a phone call of a club and they're all going to go together? So is Michael Edwards going to get on the phone to Julian Ward and to Ian Graham and go, right, lads, Chelsea have just offered us all, let's go.
By all accounts, Julian's basically said that's not happening. Otherwise, they'd have put him on gardening leave, so they believe him. So I think
Ian Graham's probably in the same boat, isn't he? Because he's still working.
I think that's probably unfounded.
Fingers crossed that's obviously you're
getting heavy Michael Edwards to Man United stuff at the moment, aren't you? And there's nothing to suggest that at some point down the line, if they're moving as a team, well, they're all going to go off into the world and do their own things. They probably made a good amount of money. They might have.
We basically post Ian Graham from Tottenham. Yeah. It was a company called Decision Technology, and FSG tried to buy Decision Technology, and when they couldn't, they just took Ian Graham instead, because Decision Technology were doing a lot of work for Tottenham Hotspur.
What
happens?
Yeah,
it does. My positive on FSG recently, I think they're really good at hiring the right people. So I don't think it matters.
Whose hands are on the wheel in this regard?
This is the difference. It's the thing that was, and this might sound mad because I feel like I'm going to criticise Jurgen Klopp here, but when it come out, Jurgen Klopp wants more say and more power. I don't mind the more say bit to an extent, but the more power I'm unsure about, because what will happen if that happens? Liverpool will continue to be really, really good, but then there's no post Jurgen. Everything relies on him. Yeah. So all of a sudden, you're Man United without Alex Ferguson, and you're like, oh my God. And then you realise the man was the structure. I think that's a really dangerous game, because I've, by all accounts...
This is what we're heading towards?
Potentially. Who knows? Because, Jurgen could be here forever. He could just hire a whole new set of people and sound. The takeover stuff, for me, is the bigger thing on this, is that... That's where the uncertainty comes from. It would be hard to work in any... And listen, I've been through this. It's hard to work for a company when that company's being sold. It is difficult. All the staff who work for you are worried about it. I've literally been through this. You guys have been, I know, something half similar. I was literally at a company when another company come and bought us, and it can be quite disconcerting. So I imagine there's a lot of unease at Liverpool, right from... Jurgen doesn't give a fuck. Jurgen's going to be the manager unless he decides not to be. But there's going to be loads of people going, well, what if they just get rid of that department? Or they decide they don't want this anymore? Or they want to bring their people in to do this? And I think that sense of unease would, right down from the fella who washes the kits at the Axe up to the top.
Look at Todd Bowley at Chelsea, who
cleaned out.
Basically, they cleaned out, or they walked. Like Czech Waltz, Gravaskaya walked. And then all of a sudden, he's this guy who doesn't even understand the mechanics of football, comes in and starts being your guy who negotiates transfers. And to be fair, we thought it was bad when Ian Eyre was having to do all of this kind of stuff. there's a guy who come in and you were the one kind of like hitting the various stories that were doing the rounds around the world of like, he thought you could trade players. He thought when you agreed a fee, you automatically took their contract on and didn't realise you had to negotiate with footballers and all this kind of stuff. And that's a extreme example, and there's a bit of like, well, that won't happen to us, but I'm certain a year ago everyone didn't think that would happen to Chelsea. In fact, a year ago Chelsea were comfortably owned by Roman Abramovich, and there were no issues at that football club whatsoever. It was going to carry on exactly as is. Here we are a year later, they've got new owners, all the football people have changed, the manager's changed, they're spunking loads of money on players that don't fill the...
I'd like to hope that, like I said, to keep the structure in place. The thing I think Liverpool have got that others haven't, that Chelsea didn't have, is the position of the manager. Like, Jurgen Klopp is so powerful. Chelsea fans are used to the change of the manager, because they don't hold them. We hold our managers up on pedestals. Like, the manager's always the biggest thing at Liverpool. It's always been that way. At other clubs, at Chelsea, it's players. Because they're that used to just flipping through it. We have, right from Shankly through Paisley and even Rafa and all.
Footy's changed. This is the problem with it. Because I broadly think it's fine. As long as you've got Jurgen, and you've got his coaching team, then they're still going to be able to get the best out of the guys. They've still got their analytics team. They've still got the people who are close to the pitch, the people who analyse how players perform in training and all that kind of stuff and how to maximise that stuff. But it's the wider stuff. It's the biggest stuff behind the scenes. That's the tip of the iceberg, isn't it? It's all the stuff that exists below the water that we don't really get to see.
And also,
but there's a comment here from Jacob Waddell who's saying the structure's still in place, though. Personnel may change, but the right structure's still there. And that's your point, Chris. We don't know if the structure's still there or not, because the structure might. Because a good example of that is, and just to use our business as example of this, if our production team walked out of this building today, All of the systems would still be here, but it goes to the point of like who can operate them. We could all figure it out.
And when they all got COVID, and it was you.
But that was the point. We know how it works, but we don't know how it works as well as
the intricacy.
Exactly. And we had it similar. There was a point when we were in the business for a very, very brief time, and a lot of things cropped up that people realised that, hang on a second, we had a big chunk of it that existed in our heads. You don't realise how much of a business you internalise when you're an essential part of that business. It's like the offices were still there, and they'll leave the laptop on the desk and the coffee cup will still be in the sink and all those kind of things, but like it's the operation of it's the technical expertise you might need to, as you say, it might be a unit, it might be like replacing an engine. You can put the engine in, but it takes time to connect it all back up again. And is it the right engine for the right type of car? When you swap an engine out on a car, and I'm no mechanic, but you open up to a load of, if you build the engine along with the car, it's got a better chance of working than if you put a new one. It's like heart transplants, all those kind of things. That's a slight concern.
The biggest thing is, though, Liverpool had a succession plan for Michael Edwards. They didn't see this Julian Ward one coming. There is no succession plan here. And that's caught them with the pants down, quite frankly. So to say it's going to be the same, well, we had a year to plan for Julian Edwards to become the director of football. We haven't got that this time around.
We've got 6 months, haven't we?
We've got 6 months at best. He was working under Michael Edwards for a full year. They've got a recruit. Who does he work under when he starts? Who teaches him the ropes? Yeah. They're not going to find someone. And in 3 months' time, we're going to go, you can join us for the last 3 months of Julian Ward's. That ain't going to happen. It's going to take a six-month period to probably recruit, unless they go internal, in which case they've got to start joining
them
now.
Which is not what they've said, which is the rumours are
they're going external. Exactly. You've also got the other things about this, is about Klopp and about Pep Linders and all those rumours that have been coming out about them wanting more power and stuff. And this is where it comes down, I think, to the European model and why the European model works. Is that football coaches are coaches. Jürgen Klopp is a football coach, and if you want the best out of your coach, you've got to let him coach. Now, you might want more, but you've got to also be strong and say there are better people at doing the other side of things that can bridge everything together.
And he's normally brilliant at that as well, about knowing what he's moreover, like, it's not even the delegation, it's like being hands off on the things that he doesn't need to fill his day, the stuff that doesn't concern him. So he goes, well, you've got that handled, so it's fine. But he's got to have trust that that's being handled as well, because that's a slippery slope. It's when all of a sudden he's going, I don't really think this. And that, to be fair, they were the rumblings in the summer, was there was a bit more discontent happening. And I know this comes from both ends. So, for example, certain journos will have connections with certain people in the club. Now, if you're talking to a jilted person who's come out and said, I've had a bad time with it, then you'll be getting their perspective on the story. The amount of ex-Liverpool players I've spoken to, for example, who got sold by Benitez, don't like Benitez. All the ones that didn't get sold by Benitez love Benitez. You would. But the disharmony that we felt in the summer is a little bit, it feels a little bit like Jürgen's kind of gone, I don't trust you in certain things. We've seen this with the conditioning of the players in pre-season. You know, there was a lot of bits and pieces around the doctor leaving that no one really truly knows the full ins and outs of that kind of stuff. And now you're hearing rumblings about them not truly backing the transfer model and all that kind of stuff. So maybe this is that. What we don't want is, to your point, Chris, is I don't want Jürgen Klopp to have full control over everything. Because I think that's a little bit of a... You're on a little bit of a...
Well, then you're feeding into exactly what Steve was talking about before, is when that person leaves, you're fucked.
Fergie Wenger.
Wenger, exactly. Fergie, that's the struggle.
on all. It, there's a reason why this is happening. My in my head, I've got it, and I think Neil Jones said this on Genuine Insight too. He said, like, Mike Gordon moving up was the catalyst to a lot of this. Yeah. Is that
because he's the person who put the team together and listened to
him. And everyone went to him, and then he went to FSG with the right as a comment to buy thing. I get it. So it's the reasons why. But like Ian Graham left, he resigned in the summer. So that was before FSG, but Liverpool up for sale. Like Mike Gordon was still in charge.
Not necessarily true, by the way.
But they might have had, yeah, from what we're aware, I suppose, they might have, maybe different. But
yeah. When the journalist found out that Liverpool was put up for sale, FSG then said yes. If the journalist didn't find out, we may never have found out.
Yeah, it's a good point, actually. Yeah, it's a fair one. It's just, it's why all this has happened. We don't know. That's the unease about it. And I suppose it's the fact is, and I thought you made a great point on the show with Josh as well. You said FSG's model got Liverpool to be the best team. It got us there. It's whether you can keep it there. And it might be that they've just decided it's not working. This could be a positive. Yeah. Because the fact is, everyone who sits on, and there'll be comments on this show right now, is like, we need to spend more, we need to do this, we need to do this, we need to do this. It might be that the model that was in place was good enough to take Liverpool from 6th, 7th, 8th in the Premier League to winning everything. And then they need a new model to contain. It might be a good thing. We don't know. But the issue with that is, I'd be more confident of that if we knew the owners were staying. And it just came out. Actually, they've decided to change in the model. They've decided they're going to go more on transfers. They're going to spend more money because they've realised getting to the top is different than staying there.
Yeah. You just might need a different skill set. We used to have this argument. Remember the latter days of Benitez and Aubrey arguing this, and foolishly ultimately, but he was saying like, we need someone like, and I think he said something stupid like David Moyes in charge, because if Liverpool slipped out of being a top bracket team, you need someone who can manage you in a different group, and it's like you might not have the right tools for the job you are. We might have the best team for the climb, but not the team for staying at the top. You might need different people with different eyes or fresh skill set to bring to the table. That's what I'm hoping this is that spin. They might have seen and a couple of things is people just get bored. People want to move on. You know, they've achieved all they're going to achieve. A lot of people will have been burned out by that quadruple thing and gone, that was our best shot there. We've took our biggest swing. We've not quite worked out. I can't go again. I can't dig deep. I can't find the energy in me to go that again. It's time for me to move on. And one thing we can say about Liverpool's ownership is that, you know, they've had the Red Sox for longer, and the Red Sox, because of that, they've had more crests and falls. So they've built, you know, World Series winning teams and gone through the doldrums and brought it back up again. You'd like to hope that maybe there's a little bit of like, there's something spotted of like, okay, we actually are aware that it's going to start to fall, and that might be as simple as this is why we're selling, because the value is about to fall through the floor, or it might be we need to make a bit of a change to revamp this to make sure that it doesn't fall through the floor, so that when we do sell it, it stays at that kind of level.
If you think like Ian Graham or Michael Edwards, like once you've won everything and you have won everything and you've won everything against the odds. Because I know Liverpool, we are one of the biggest, if not the biggest football clubs in the world, but it was winning everything was against the odds, because there was teams doing things differently with more money and infinite resource that we just didn't have. Mm-hmm. Getting to the top of that hill, like you just said, coming off it and then going back again, it's the Marvin Hagler quote, isn't it? Like, you know, it's hard to get out of bed and go for your run when you've been sleeping in silk pyjamas. Because yeah. He said, like, when you come from nothing, it was boss, but then do I need to do it again kind of thing. It's dead hard to beat Manchester City.
Lots of older wrestlers with big bellies but huge biceps.
It's dead hard to go and beat Man City again. And the model might need to change. The model that we had in place, unearthed, Liverpool didn't unearth Alisson Becker and Mo Salah, but it went and got the sign. They were data signings. They were clever signings. Sadio Mane is the same. Can you beat Manchester City from this point now with doing that? Or do you just need to go,
well, the model,
there's fucking Erling Haaland, let's go and buy
him. The model's wrong in that you need to sell players to produce.
Yeah.
We haven't been selling the players, so you can't spend the money that you haven't been selling. That's where the model falls down. They can still probably think they can gain advantage on this player over this player, but you need the money to be able to do that, because you're not shopping in the £20 million player that makes a difference anymore. You're shopping in the 70 to £110 million bracket. You've got to sell players to do that. FSG haven't been doing that.
Yeah.
You know, we can't run Wijnaldum's contract down. You can't get Jordan Henderson's contract down and then renew it. You can't do that. You have to sell one of Salah or Mane if the model is going to be the model. That's where it's fallen down.
And
more
of course,
than
and that's so much of that circumstantial around the COVID stuff. I'd say this. If Spanish football hadn't fallen flat on its face, there's no way Mo Salah gets his contract renewed at Liverpool. He's playing for Real Madrid 2 years ago. Probably, maybe even more. You get 150 million quid and you go again and you revamp everything you're doing. Whereas they've had to double down on the unity and keeping guys that understand what you're doing. And you know, and that's what one of the things he said, like when people were raising their eyebrows at renewing Lovren's contract back in the day, and that was because it was better to have someone who, yeah, look, he was had his suspect moments, but someone who's a known entity and you know him inside and out, and he knows your system and your team and your expectations inside and out, is a safer bet than getting a new player in every year who might be a bit better, but he's got to learn the ropes each and every time. And that's what they've doubled down on, but they've reached the zenith of that now. And that, you're right, that's where they're at now, is that they actually need to go into the market and go and buy big. And that's probably right. That's right, though, isn't it? Because everyone's, when people compare Liverpool's net spend, people froth at the mouth at the idea that Arsenal spent 250 million quid and they spent 200 million or whatever the summer before, and Man City have spent big money in recent windows. Liverpool, okay, we can sit here and say, yes, they needed to, but they didn't need to. There was no, it wasn't burning. It wasn't an absolute act of like desperation. There weren't huge holes that needed refilling in the way. The ones that did got filled. Thiago was effectively Wijnaldum's replacement. Diaz is effectively Mane's replacement. Konate was the upgrade, was Lovren's replacement, etc., etc. But those teams all were either on the climb themselves. Arsenal have had to spend to get themselves to where they are. That's what Liverpool did in the early days. And Man City were just a couple of years ahead of us on the cycle. So Aguero, Fernandinho, Kompany, Silva, the backbone of that side, all needed replacing, and you don't replace that with £10 million signings, you replace that with £50 to £100 million signings, and that's what they've done. We're due that now, and that's where the model needs to change.
And also, like, the mad thing for me is when people start to cite Arsenal and stuff, like, they've not won anything.
No, I know.
Another thing, let's remember, they've been doing it for 15 years. Yeah. By the way, it's not like a shorter period of time they've been trying to get back to the top of the hill for. They're top of Christmas. Brilliant. Well done. Fantastic. We've done that and not won the league.
Yeah.
You know, they've still got to go out and prove that they're the best in the country by winning the league.
We
and it's going to be difficult for them.
We were talking about Christmas and ended up at our goal. We needed to score to get us into the Champions League. What I would say, I think as a general thing with the ownership thing, it could be good. It really could. We could get an amazing owner who comes in and just goes, yeah, I want to do this, this, and this. And there you go, there's Kylian Mbappe, and there's Jude Bellingham and Morata. Like, that could happen. The issue we've got at the moment, and again, I don't want to go too, is that it feels like that's not going to happen. All the whispers are that they're going to be sold to another American consortium, is what you're hitting. And the same again. And so that's not going to happen. So then these people are going to have to come in with a way of. I think it's easier to get from sixth to second than it is from second to first. It's hard, and staying up there constantly and competing with them.
I've got no idea how you stay on top, because I've never experienced it.
Well,
I've never seen Liverpool team do it.
Yeah, but there's a team down the road who show you how you do it, and it means doing lots and lots of spending. That's how you do it. Manchester City, like you just said there, their bench is 50, 60, 70 million pound players. We're not there yet. No one else is really there anywhere.
I still argue we've still got the second best squad in the league, by the way.
I would agree, but second best, that's sound, but we want to be first best. So
but you can't be first best.
No, why not?
Because Man City are playing with a different.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Who knows? The person who owns Liverpool could play with those rules.
I think the biggest concern for me moving forward on the sale is that United are up at the same time.
That's the
biggest thing for me, is because you've got two absolute football powerhouses up for sale at the same time in a very small pool.
It's like selling your house when the next door neighbour's on the same house.
But it's not the same house.
And it's got a pool.
We've got more trophies, but they unfortunately commercially are a much bigger entity than we are, and their capacity for sales on the commercial side is much bigger than ours.
But.
And because of that, you know, they've been able to achieve, we've just overtaken them in terms of figures for the first time. They've been shit for years. We've been the best we've been for years. Like, if we're a billion apart, and I think we probably are a billion apart in valuation, Man United being more, I think there's a lot more money to be earned out of Manchester United than there is out of Liverpool right now, and that makes them a stronger proposition for owners or potential owners.
There is, if you're just carrying on to do what the Glazers are doing, which is don't invest and just, and you know, obviously they are investing, but you know what I mean? They're investing in players, but not investing in infrastructure, because Manchester United...
But this is just buying a doer-upper, Paul, in the housing market.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? 50 million sounds like a lot to revamp a stand or to put a Kirby complex together, but actually in the grand scheme of what Man United earn in a year, if you just didn't take the Glazers' money out for 1 year, you could pay for both of those things.
Yeah.
So it's absolutely nothing in that regard.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
But how much has Tottenham Stadium cost?
A billion?
Yeah. You could be potentially looking at that to revamp, because Old Trafford needs knocking down and starting again. The training facilities are awful. They need to do all that again. And you're right, 50 million for a training complex, if we're going on the axes, is pretty small change in the grand scheme of things. But there's a lot of...
You don't need to do it all at once, do you? That's the other thing. The main stand was done, 2017, was it? Or 2016? Yeah. It was a long time ago now, wasn't it? And it was still not there on the Anfield Road. Obviously, that's coming next season and stuff. Mm. So there's 5 years, give or take, for two stands.
The thing that's interesting for me on the United stuff is I think United are bordering on being a sports washing candidate, which I don't think they've ever been before, because
their fans are unhappy, and if you take them there, you make them happy.
Yes.
Liverpool can't be sport washed because we're already kind of happy.
Yeah.
Also,
because they hate their owners. They've been fighting an aimless cause against their ownership. They've now, all their fans have grown up in an era where they've been the best, and now they're not the best, and their expectation levels are much higher than their ability to meet those expectation levels, and their fan base is so broad that it totally dwarfs the core of the fan bases, which is the ones that who are like us, which is, again, without going down this you know, strong socialist flag waving thing, which are the moral voice of their fan base or whatever. Again, you see it by how many people who thought they'd won the league because they signed Cristiano Ronaldo back, and it was like they'd won something because they bought a famous footballer. Those ones would be a loud voice in that kind of instance. They might be that somebody less scrupulous might be able to get in the door at Old Trafford, and they might be more welcoming of their new dictators, as it were, because of the current climate.
There's a lot of Liverpool fans in the same boat. There's a lot of Liverpool fans.
Oh God, yeah. I just mean by comparison to Manchester United.
Maybe I wouldn't even be that sure.
The cities are similar in size, give or take, but their worldwide fan base and following is like 50-70% more online than ours, across their Facebook, their TikTok, and all that type of stuff. So Paul's right, by comparison to a 500,000 to a million city, it's absolutely...
You could sports watch United easier than you could sports watch Liverpool, because the ground is more fertile for it at the moment.
It's worth noting, there'll be people who support Man United in Manchester who have greatly benefited from Manchester City being bought, because what I would say, like, everyone says sport washing, blah, blah. They have absolutely made Manchester better. The area of Manchester where East Lynch is, or their ground is much better. So there'll be Man United fans who go, well, if we get the Dubai, whoever it is, in like the guys down the road got, and they turn around Old Trafford, which again could do with a little bit of a job on it at times, it's easy to say, well, listen, look, go 20 minutes down the road and you'll see what can happen if you come and embrace us. I think you're right. I think Chris is more about it, is that if you're buying, if they're both there and you've got to spend, I say a bit more, it's a lot of money more, but if you've got that money, it's relative. You go to United because there's more, you can make more out of it at the back end. You spend six, seven billion on Man United, you spend 500 million to make it better, and they're worth 10 million.
No, well,
it's going to be hard.
The thing is, that you say that, but I'm not sure that's the case. This is the thing, your revenue streams are not going to be bigger for that. You've got to pay £1 billion to fix the stadium and X amount to upgrade the training facilities. That actually doesn't really add value to your business.
I 100% disagree.
Well, it doesn't, because you're still getting the same amount of people through the turnstiles. That's why they haven't done it. That's why Glazers have done that, because there's no value, because you're not getting a bigger stadium.
I think a billion's a bit rich. I'm just fixing a stadium. It's a few holes in the ceiling.
It's not.
Then the flip side is you increase the capacity of Old Trafford.
Yeah,
and
but they're also not.
It.
Yeah, but I know. But again, they're not selling.
The point he's making, and where he's right, is that their capacity for commercial is much bigger than Liverpool's all around the world.
Yes, but also
the stadium
doesn't
make any difference to that. But winning does.
Yeah.
And that's the difference there. We've just overtaken them.
Yeah.
And they've been shit for 7 years.
There's a lot of Man United fans.
But what I'm saying is they maximise the commission. That's just on the pitch. Success is that drives that. And that's.
But
that's
you, they could make 100 million more on pitch as well a year. You know what I mean? From actually going deeper into these competitions.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like when Liverpool get 100 million for going to the Champions League final. They could get that.
Yeah.
And that's already 100 million more than we've earned.
Yeah.
That was the biggest thing,
because we include that in all of ours, and their commercial capacity being much bigger. You could look at a gap of 200 million again on the season.
What I'm saying is this is where the house analogy falls down, because you buy a keeper up in a house and you put that in, and it will increase in value. But there's a point where the revenues are not going to double. You know what I mean? And valuations of clubs are not going to double in the current world environment and the current football climate. TV deals are not getting significantly bigger. They're not going to make the jump in the next 10 years.
Man United's end valuation is a lot bigger than Liverpool's.
I'm not saying it's not. I'm just saying to my point I'm kind of getting to is that I agree that if I was a multi-billionaire, I would buy, not attached to the football club, I'd buy Man United over Liverpool, because you're going to be far more welcomed. The scale for growth, because I disagree is I don't think there's a massive scale for growth in terms of revenues, because they're already, it's through the on the pitch stuff. It's going to cost lots more money to buy them and to get them back to the top again. Liverpool, and that's where the Liverpool problem comes.
I don't think it does. I just think you need to do it right.
Our
wages are probably less than theirs. So you spend that money right, and they've got it right. You spend the money that they've been spending in the transfer market right.
Yeah.
You're not actually spending any more money on the
pitch.
You just need to do a better job of what you're buying.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what Man United have dwarfed us in transfer fees and dwarfed us in wages.
Can I jump in? You buy Liverpool for £3 billion now, whatever it is. How do you make Liverpool worth more?
No, exactly. That's my point.
Man United are worth, say, they're selling it for five now. There is so much opportunity for growth, because the ground shit, the training ground shit. After fans don't buy Man United merch because they're down the Norwich shop buying green and gold stuff. there's so much more growth. You buy Liverpool now, it's going to be hard to increase the revenues. How you increase the revenues on Liverpool is you spend more on transfers to win more, and your on-field earnings grow.
Yeah.
That's the main issue. Them coming out for sale, I don't think it's been talked about enough from a Liverpool point of view. It's really bad, in my opinion.
I think yes and no, because I think the offering at Liverpool hasn't changed. Man United, I think, doesn't really change it. I think Man United are lower hanging fruit, albeit at a greater cost, because of all the things we've discussed, because of that scale. The stuff you can improve, and it's whether what we're arguing is where their ceiling is, which none of us can prove one way or the other, so whatever. There's what I'm putting at Man United is we agree for different reasons. I think it's because it's easier to win the fan base over, and there's more wins to be had at Manchester United than Liverpool. Your margin for error is tiny at Liverpool now, because where do you go? You can win a couple more trophies, but we're already there.
This is where I have to disagree. You're not going to buy Man United because your margin for error is bigger. You're going to buy Manchester United because you can make more money.
Oh, no,
that's why someone will buy it.
I'm not talking about that point. I'm saying when you're going in there, what I'm saying is from my perspective is you buy a football club, you buy Liverpool, and if we don't win the league in the next 2 years, then people and you haven't bought the right players, then you failed as Liverpool owners, because you've got to take a club that is so close to being right at the top and make that final step, and that's so easy to get wrong. Whereas you've got 5 years of building Manchester United back up. You can be building the ground, you can be building the training facilities, you can be buying better people, you can be putting better people in slots and winning. It's so much harder to win in the short term at Liverpool. You've got to maintain at Liverpool, and that in itself is a very hard thing to do, which is one of the reasons why I think the current ownership are balking at it, because you have to pay twice as much money now just to stay the same. Whereas Man United, I'm saying, you look at Man United and go, fucking hey, yeah. And you've got to have your fans bought in for all this, by the way. And that's the hard part with us, is our fan base. If we, this is where it's potential catastrophe faces us, because unless we do hit the ground running with new owners and all of a sudden we pay big money for big transfers and we are competing right at the top, everything else is going to look fucked by comparison. Whereas United, fucking hell, walk in, as I say, put a new fresh coat of paint on a few bits and pieces.
All you need to do is not
take
100 million out of season.
Yeah, don't take dividends out for a while.
That's all you need to do.
Also, I disagree on the revenue thing. I think where we're going with this, there's a reason that everyone's selling. I'm taking Abramovich apart, but that was obviously different reasons. The Super League failed,
yeah,
and that was the growth of that's where the money was coming from. The next step of making all these teams worth more and more money was the Super League. When that failed, he thought, we're done. There's not much more we can do on this.
It was FFP and then it was the Super League.
FFP failed, Super League. Where else are we going? We can't make no money. It's not going to be worth any more than this. At some point, there'll be a day, and I don't know when it is, and if I'm investing in football now, I'm looking at going, there'll be a day when we can sell our own media. They just will.
That's that was Neil Ackerton's point a couple of weeks ago, and that's the difference. But that's a gamble and an unknown. That's what the Premier League is rallying against.
This is why it is state-owned operators that are looking at this, because you don't need to make a profit. Mm-hmm. That's what it comes down to. The American billionaires still want to make that profit, and I think that's why I think,
or grow the overall value to boost
to
their
sell
portfolio.
It, yeah. And I think that's why United are a better proposition for them rather than Liverpool, because you can still make a profit from Manchester United, and I don't think you can from Liverpool in quite the same way.
Yeah, it's hard. That's what I'm saying. It's hard to make Liverpool worth more at the minute. It's going to have to come on the pitch. We're pretty good on the pitch as it is.
Yeah, exactly.
There is a really small thing where it gets into a bidding war. Like, it's maybe a 5% chance of that happening. 95% chances, I think it hurts us that Manchester United are up for sale at
the same
time.
There's more people. Man United, I actually think it could work the other way, because Man United are just such a, because of the size of the brand, more and how successful they've been in 20, 30 years, when lots of these people have been making that money and come out on top, who will know Manchester United because they do, because they're just in more media, they made more films, and their marketing's been so much more powerful that more unscrupulous people are likely to be interested in Manchester United just as a plaything. Yeah, exactly. Then you heard of Liverpool. There's maybe a better chance still of people going. If someone buys Liverpool, it's probably because they've got more sporting interest in it than necessarily it being, because you can't sport wash and you can't, and there's not scope to make massive chunks of revenue over at Leeds.
Yeah, it's going to be difficult. I think Man United will be sold before us, and our fans are going to go off. It's hard to sell at the moment.
Absolutely.
What I don't want is it to become a cock measuring competition where X fella goes and buys Man United, so Y fella who hates X fella goes and buys Liverpool and goes, well, fuck it, if you're buying a footy team, I am. And I know that sounds mad in the era of billionaires, but trust me, there are people out there with so much money that they'll just do that. Like, you've just bought in, well, you've got a club then, that means we need one. Could I be honest then?
Again, but that's for the state ownership thing.
That can happen. It is that's the uncertainty. There's a lot of uncertainty around us. But like I say, there's some people, and I'm guessing in the chat now, there'll be loads of people who are nervous about this, and there'll be loads of people who are just genuinely excited about it.
Well,
I'll be honest, I think I'm edging more towards the excited part of it. I think it could be really good for us.
I remain reasonably optimistic about the whole thing, potentially. But Man United, I think I'm a bit calmer because of Manchester United, because I just think they'll draw all the fucking nutcases.
Yes, probably.
And all the ones who want it for fucking mad reasons will look at Man United and go, quid. I'll have a pot. Same as Chelsea, you know, because they're just they'll see the money there. Whereas, yeah, Liverpool have got a bit. Maybe just pulls a few more of those people over that way.
Can I ask a question slightly off topic, but also slightly on topic? Who are the good owners in world football?
I have no idea.
In terms of what?
Who's a good owner of a football club?
See, from a sporting perspective, Manchester City have got great owners. It's whether you agree with them as a whole overall. What I would say on City is that they have made Manchester better. And again, it's whether you go down.
You say they've made Manchester better, but there's some
scrupulous contracts been given out by City Manchester Council. There,
lots
by the
of
way.
Very very shit. Allegedly,
but they have
allegedly
shit affordable, overpriced housing has been put that's not owned by the City of Manchester anymore. You know, which
I get it.
Yeah,
there's a lot, and this is the thing. It goes back to this conversation before.
You're arguing sports washing topics is what is the point.
Also, there's no good billionaires. They're all pretty much pricked.
No, I think so many people have, and the reason I asked is, so many people have got an opinion on who they want as an owner.
Who wins?
But who's a good owner? No one. I mean, I've watched footy with you for 30 years. You couldn't give me an answer on who's a good owner. No. It's mad.
No.
Because you're right. There aren't any.
It depends on who's loads winning.
You can tell me bad owners, though.
Yeah.
You can reel off a list of bad owners to me.
I would suggest, and I don't actually know who owns Bayern Munich, but Bayern Munich seem to be able to stay at the top, even though people hate them. They seem to be, they're the Man United of Germany. They seem to be able to stay at the top. The fans seem really happy.
They've got a great understanding with Dortmund that we're going to take your best player. We're going to keep you at fucking arm's distance and we're going to stay at the top.
If they had two or three more clubs in that league who would add the financial might that they have, it would be interesting to see how good their owners are.
The thing's interesting because all the football clubs essentially play along with that because Bayern Munich draws the eyes and the television money.
Yeah.
That's why everybody goes along with it, because if Bayern Munich stop being good, there ain't going to be any money in that league.
But Spain's the fucking worst of it because their TV rights deal. It's telling that, yeah, we've said this before, but Atletico Madrid have managed to just hold their own, but look what they've done. They've fucked themselves and that'll all come unravelled. Barcelona have come unravelled because of how it's
going to win the league.
Yeah, yeah. And Real Madrid, again, because they've got, they're effectively state-owned in their own way, have been able to keep going. But them hoovering up all the TV rights deals, so the lion's share of the money goes to Real Madrid and Barcelona every single season.
That'll happen here, though. That's going to happen here.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's
Liverpool are going to be on that.
But the English club, yeah, exactly. And look, we're the ones who stand to benefit from it, if and when it does. But
Canada does already.
Yeah, but in a huge way. When you can pay for every Liverpool game on LFC TV, and all of a sudden that money goes in straight directly into the club.
What I would say, mate, there's a lot of people, and again, to that, I know we've been going on a while, is that this is why there's a lot of fans, and I'm not sure I agree, but I half get it. Is like, all billionaires are knobheads. Just give us the best billionaire, and we'll accept that. Listen, John Emery and FSA and Angels, you know, and there's a lot of people, and so if you just get a knobhead owner, and eventually all of footy is going to be owned by a knobhead billionaire.
I would suggest, and I hate having to put out this, because like, you end up when you ask questions like that, Chris, you end up in a situation where you've got to say positive things about Liverpool's current owners, which people just are not receptive to. But there has not been a better ownership group in English football over the last 7 years than FSG that aren't the owners of Manchester City in terms of what they've been able to deliver. What they've been able to win.
You know, if FFP
and they've
worked,
done it without far less questionable ethics behind it. And you can treat that as a good thing or a bad thing. But
that's more like the getting your best mate paid over the odds for the sponsor your stadium and stuff. I get that. I think if FFP was rock solid and fucking worked and was punishable, like in the NFL, if you go over your salary cap, you are punished. If you do this happens. You can't do it. It's not allowed. You are not allowed to play. If FFP was that watertight, we would have the best owners. I think FSG with a strong FFP would be amazing.
If they had a greater legal budget,
ESL,
in the ESL, the FFP, and the FSG, and the EPL. No, but if you think about it, it would work because you win on you're hiring your Ian Grahams and your fine margins and you're growing your commercials. That's how you win. When it's an unfair playing field, it feels like, you know, that's what you're fighting. You're the best middleweight boxer in the world, but you're fighting at heavyweight and you're going to get knocked out.
Well, yeah,
we might just need to go and get a big horrible heavyweight fella.
What's changed is that you need both now. because Man City have got both. Yeah. And that's the problem when you haven't got the most money, is you find new ways of working, and the people with the biggest money either steal those people off you. So in the gaming industry, this is what happened, why FIFA ended up as the bigger game over Pro Evolution Soccer, because EA were like, well, no one likes our game as much, it's not as playable. They went and stole all the devs from Konami and brought them over to build the new FIFA
with more money behind them.
Yeah, exactly. And
so shiny graphics and player names,
exactly, add playability to all the other license and all that other stuff, and you've got a better game and you're going to win. And that is Man City to where Liverpool
the problem with that is, there used to be loads of footy games, and some of them were crap, but some of them were really fun. Like, actual soccer was just a fun game.
This is football was class when you used to do the dance.
But this is again, and it's a great analogy for how football's gone, and like the movie industry and TV and all that. All of a sudden, there's a minimum barrier to entry because there's a minimum expectation, so people expect graphics and they expect licenses and they expect all the shiny bells and whistles. Playability, almost, you then have to have that plus playability, so you need to be super talented but have the money to add all the extra bits on top. And that's where all football's become this singular entity, where there's going to end up being, that's where the Super League is the natural thing that'll happen. There'll be 10
something
to 20 super clubs in the world that eventually end up in a league together doing that. Champions League is kind of that already, I guess, to some extent, but it just will, because it's happening with businesses. It's why you go from a million corner shops to Asda and
it's called globalisation.
Exactly. Yeah,
what
exactly.
I would say, they're quick as well, is that Arsenal are going through it now. They hated Stan Kroenke a while ago. They've gone back into a place where they've got it. If Arsenal win one league title this year, they might. I don't think they will, they might. And then before you know it, Manchester City win the next three and Arsenal aren't competing anymore. They'll go from, we've got to the top, and then Stan Kroenke might not be the man to keep him there. It feels like Liverpool might have.
This is fucking Barcelona all over. Barcelona were competing with Real Madrid, but they were actually competing with Paris Saint-Germain, because PSG, the second they buy Neymar, they drop a hand grenade onto the football market. They inflate the values and they make all of a sudden Messi's fair game, because all of a sudden you can pay him £1 million a week if you want to.
You're the big fish in a small pond until you're not.
Yeah.
And PSG came in and made Barcelona the small fish for the first time in 30 years.
They effectively went to Barcelona and went, we're having him.
Yeah, that's what Barcelona have been doing for years, and it threw everything off.
Yeah, it led to a situation, big time. Yeah, and it led to a situation where they falsely inflated the market because they could, because you cared.
Yeah, because then no one else can play in the market. It's just them and City.
And you're then telling the best player on the planet that your club can't pay you what you're worth, because we're paying Neymar more money than you're earning, and Neymar was third fiddle to you. He was behind Suarez and behind you in that team. So Barcelona are then forced to. And we've done it with Salah. This is why Salah's on £100,000 plus more than Virgil van Dijk, because we had no choice, because Man City could have been paying Kevin De Bruyne £350,000 a week, and that's the kind of parity he's striving for. Anyway, this is fucking, we do this for fucking hours, this is not what I wanted. The big question, you pointed out the comments, what people want to talk about. There's a lot of really, really good comments, but the best one here is David Love, who says Steele looks more like Gilbert.
Yes, I know who he is.
Oh, fuck off.
But Mika Lobano says more like Goldberg to me.
But then again, I'm not even sure that's a good thing. He's a bit of a knobhead, isn't he?
Yeah, it was better shout than Perry Saturn, though. I
think Perry Saturn's better looking than Goldberg.
Are you messing?
I think Goldberg's more imposing. Just pure physical looks, yeah? I think Perry Saturn was prettier.
I mean,
I'm not like a rugged.
You're a big fan of squints.
I'm not a very good look. I'm not like a rugged man. I need to be more pretty than rugged. Goldberg had that rugged sexism. Sexiology.
Sometimes if you just let them talk.
Sexy bald man. That's what I was going for. I'm not going for rugged bald man. But I'll take the Goldberg shout.
Sponsorship this week is Who Knows Wins, as there has been on the podcast this season. There's loads going on at the moment. There is one for tonight's game against Wales, which might have kicked off by the time we finish this chat. The England-Wales game is one that's available. Just in terms of last week's results, the pick 10 joint winner was Jake Peralta and Weaver Jag, 1985.
Jake Peralta, isn't that off Brooklyn Nine-Nine?
Might be. Taking £3,000. Steve got four, which was £0, coming tied 804th.
In your face, 805th.
No leagues involving the Reds this week, of course, but still time to enter the Wales versus England game day, which has a 5k pot. Plus, if you enter via redmen.whoknowswins.com as a new user, make a deposit, you get a £5 promo credit in your account. Let's have a look then at the pick 10 we've got up on the screen already.
This is the England Wales one.
England Wales one.
Do you want to go to pick 10?
Yeah, go to the pick 10 one, please.
I'm going to find it first. Now, you've thrown me off.
Brilliant, top content. As always mentioned, please go to redmen.whoknowswins.com for this, because it tracks it and it makes us look good. There is a QR code on the screen for YouTube users as well. It was the pick 10 was on as well, wasn't it?
No, it was in England Wales, but we can't find the pick 10.
It might be there, it's not there. I think we're focused mainly on England and Wales this week.
Okay, Sam, we'll go
for the We've got our picks, though, if you want to bring them up very quickly.
Okay, yeah. Aaron, can you bring our picks up, please, and we'll just go through them very
slightly
briefly.
Concerning that mine hasn't saved.
For England Wales, I think it's going to be a one all draw, England Wales, by the way, and I've picked accordingly, because what the question I asked in the office was, what's the most disappointing way England can get out the group? And of course that is like a 3-0 win to Wales. Because I think, just from seeing the meltdowns over drawing against USA, which I find baffling, because I don't care really about England, but I have more of an interest in England than I do in all the other nations, because, you know, yes, Scouse not English, but also, you know, I live in England. I am still, it's on my passport. I have liked England in past tournaments. So the reaction to that draw against USA, it was a bit crap, and the performance was a bit rubbish, and USA were more energetic and whatever, but, like, Barrett Southgate's managing a tournament. He's earned the right to manage a tournament because he's been quite good in the last couple of tournaments that he's managed. He's clearly got a strategy at play. You don't need to win all three of your group games. It doesn't matter. And it's like, they're actually, barring that, you know, getting hammered by Wales, they're going to get through anyway.
Probably going to win the group.
The whole point of tournament football, as I've always seen it, is to peak at the fucking right time.
Yeah.
It's not to peak fucking in the group stages. Now, whether Gareth Southgate's the man that can get England to peak later on is kind of moot at this point, to be honest with you, because it's about getting through the group first and then get better.
How many teams at World Cups have you seen? You've been like, oh my God. The teams we all remember almost, like Holland in 98, and you're like, oh my God, Holland, wow. Don't win it, do they? You know what I mean? It's about France. Zidane gets sent off, comes back, and then they really start to hit the stride. They haven't got a goal scorer in that side, but they managed to piece it all together at the right time. Brazil, if Ronaldo wasn't, you know, having fits or whatever in the changing room beforehand, would come good at the right time and all that kind of stuff. You're dead right. I think it's quite funny. So anyway, I've gone for the draw, and that's how I've picked it. Chris, what have you gone for?
I have gone for England to win, both teams to score no, over 2.5 goals no, half time result draw, Harry Kane to score any time, yes. Gareth Bale's playing full game, no. England to have over 5.5 shots, and no to all of these. England to have 6.5 corners, no to England having over 1.5 cards, and Wales have over 2.5 cards, no.
What was your... Did you have an overall strategy behind that?
Yes, click one of the options. But mainly, I think it's going to be 1-0 to England, but it's going to be 0-0 at half-time, as in keeping with the rest of the World Cup. I think it's a safe bet, and Harry Kane scores a penalty.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
I took Kane no, because I don't think he's going to... I think he'll get him off. I went the other way around. I think England are going to win comfortably. So I went for England half-time, England full-time.
So England to win comfortably, but Kane not to score.
I think England are going to be 2-0 up at half-time, and they're going to win the game 2-0. And he'll
take Harry Kane
and he'll take Harry Kane off because his ankle's fucked. That was my general consensus. I think it's going to be I watched Wales the other day in that game, and they've got Danny Ward in goal.
Yeah.
He's a hologram. Like, both those goals the other day, you should have said, like, so that was my thinking. Like, but again, by the time people listen to this, it might be completely wrong, and I've been shit at this game, so maybe Wales fans should rejoice at my prediction.
I just don't, I think England have done all their easy win already so far. They're going into grind mode now, and again, they've just got to get through this game. You know, they just got to make sure no one important gets injured. And they
that's
get
like Henderson starting over Bellingham, isn't it?
That's it. Again, he's used the squad. They need to rotate, doesn't he? Because he played the same seat. He started.
Bellingham
the same
might
team.
Be more important to us.
Sacrifice Jordan. Yeah. Take one with the team. Someone's going to boot him. You need to take
that. Need to sign him in January. You don't want him injured.
Yeah, he goes on the phone. Just do not let you get kicked. You go and take all the beatings, Jordan.
Right.
In a bit.
Sad, yeah, get involved. Redmen.whoknowswins.com and play along and let us know you're getting on with all that as well. Right, sad. Let's talk Steven Gerrard. Steven Gerrard's debut anniversary. And first and foremost, where does he rank in your all-time favourite Liverpool player list, Steve?
Oh, it's a tough one. Favourites and best are different things, aren't they?
Yes, that's why I said favourite.
He's definitely the best. I'm buying time.
Buying time.
I don't know if he's my favourite because, like, I almost like the people who are little, who aren't as good. I don't know, like, favourite's different. He's up there. You know what? He probably is the favourite. He was the favourite of the era where I was properly getting into footy. So the poster boy on my walls kind of thing was Michael Owen. Yeah. Robbie Fowler, Michael Owen. So it was like late '90s, early 2000s. And then by the time I was like. So the treble season stuff, Gerrard was just coming through. That was when I thought I was like this cool lad who was going to match in Lacoste trackies, and I'm too cool to have a favourite player. But
did you have Rockports with your tracky bottoms sucked into your socks?
I did not, but I did own Rockports for school, and I had a Lacoste trackie and stuff.
Of course.
But so the era of me really getting into footy and loving footy and going home and away every single week was dominated by that fella. And quite often for the part of it, he was carrying players who just didn't deserve to be on the same pitch as him. So for that reason, yeah, and luckily enough as well, it always helps when there's a bit of a privileged position. Like, having met the fella, like, I know he comes across sometimes as people like don't like him, and there's stories like he's a bit of an arsehole and stuff. I've never got that. I've met him a couple of times. He was a sound lad, sound fella. So is he my favourite ever player? Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I haven't got an answer for that. Probably not, because I fucking love some of the lads now.
Yeah,
that's the only difference.
It's funny how it happened so quickly, because I was watching through his goals. There's a 37 minute video of Steven Gerrard goals on the Liverpool YouTube channel. 37 minutes. You know, you sit and watch just Gerrard score goals for Liverpool.
I'm wondering how Salah's is going to be. How long is Salah's going to be?
But it's
it could be like 2 hours.
But watching it back, it really transported me back to that time, and Gerrard. Sort of around 2000 to 2002
angry Gerrard,
skinhead, angry
babyface still at the same time.
Yeah, the one who just was this like scouse lunatic in the middle of the pitch, and he didn't score loads of goals because he played a lot deeper, but he just had that thunderbolt of a shot on him. That was that everyone carks to 2005-2006 Gerrard, because that is peak. He was the best midfielder on the planet, in my opinion, at that time. But when I loved him the most was early 2000s, when he was just this bundle of energy, snapping people and then kicking really hard shots with the skin, a little scally running around the pitch.
In a shirt that's too big for him. It was like slightly oversized, wasn't it?
Defo had Lacoste tracky and Rockport shoes, you know what I mean? At that time, that was me Gerrard. So I think that Gerrard is probably, it's probably like Fowler, that Gerrard is my two favourites, so he's probably like.
I think
the three players for me are Gerrard, Fowler, and Carragher. They're the three of them, like, you know what I mean. And I think you can tell my biases by who my three favourite players are. They are all from Liverpool. They are, you know, and that, there's nothing wrong with that. I've got those biases. Everyone's got biases.
You can't have it. Well, again, it's mad when people say things like.
It's easy to relate to people.
Yeah, of course.
You know, at the age when Fowler was breaking through, like, he was only a couple of years older than us. You know, you still had those dreams yourself, even though you knew it was never going to fucking happen. To see somebody do that was absolutely amazing. To be you on the football field and be better than everybody else in the league when he breaks through. So Steven Gerrard is, you know, for me, I think he's probably. Over the course of his career, he's the best Liverpool player that I've watched.
Yeah.
I would say that Suarez had the best season I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And was probably the height that maybe will never be touched again from that one year. But even in the Suarez-Salah debate, I think Salah's a better footballer over the course of his Liverpool career because of what he was able to do. And these are all things that you've got to balance when you're looking at favourites and stuff. But ultimately, it's a lot easier to fall in love with a footballer when they're older than you. And I think that's where your favourites are always going to be, slightly older than you.
There's
nothing wrong with that. Like, you know, a 50-year-old fella falling in love with Mo Salah is just a bit weird.
And the same players who are a bit ageless, who are younger than you. So, like, Andy Robertson's a good example of that. He doesn't feel like a kid. You know, it's harder for me to say, like, Trent would be my favourite footballer because I see him as a young a young kid who's come through, rather than like, yeah, you're looking up to people. I would never have had like a, I wouldn't have a Trent shirt. Not that I'd have a Gerrard shirt now, but you know, to the point. And like Harvey Elliott,
but you did have a Gerrard shirt, probably. That's the difference,
that,
isn't
exactly
it?
that kind of thing. And that's just, again, you're right. That's just a pure age thing, right? What we're gonna do is we are going to pick and create a definitive list, 1 to 5, of Gerrard's greatest ever goals. And people are going to wildly disagree with us, but we're going to see. We're going to decide, because people seem to think that we talk like we are the voices of authority on such things. So let's just pretend that's the case.
By the way, on this section, unlike every other section, I'm only talking for myself, not for Liverpool fans.
No, you're talking for every Liverpool fan. Yeah. We are, unfortunately, sorry, Chris, we are the de facto voice for all Liverpool fans.
This is the definitive list of Steve Gerrard's best goals.
Spoiler, it's not.
No, it is.
No,
it is.
Not today.
It is. He scored 100.
Get on the overlap, lad, and start talking about it, lad.
Yeah. He scored 186 goals for Liverpool.
He did. Most of them were brilliant.
His opponent that he scored most against?
Everton.
Aston Villa. Scored 13 against Aston Villa. Everton, second with 10. Manchester United with 9. 9 against West Ham, 8 against Newcastle, 7 against Bolton. 178 of his goals came from starts, just 8 off the substitutes bench.
Three of them were in one game.
Was that what, Napoli?
Pretty odd to me, for fuck's sake, lads. Someone score goals.
120 goals in the Premier League, 30 in the Champions League, 15 in the FA Cup, 9 in the League Cup, 7 in the Europa League, 4 in the UEFA Cup, 1 in the World Club Championship.
How many from outside the box?
I don't know, actually. 129 from open play, 47 penalties, 10 direct free kicks.
At least 10 then.
The spell of the game when he scored his most goals.
Ooh, 15 to 30.
61 to 75.
That was my next guess.
42 goals in that spell of a football match. Yeah, fascinating stuff. Okay, so
did you have an answer on outside the box?
No, I don't.
We've got different definitions, but fascinating. the minutes of the game thing, I don't give a fuck. I'll be honest. I remember the goals, David Boss, but I'll be honest.
61 to 75.
There you go. Fascinating.
What was his least spell?
Probably 1 to 15.
1 to 15, yeah, correct.
Fascinating.
Absolutely fucking fascinating.
By comparison. Cool. Let's throw some goals out there.
Debut goal, Sheffield Wednesday. That dribble, that feint, that finish. Was it Sheffield Wednesday?
It was.
You're looking at me like it was not.
It was the debut.
His debut goal.
West Ham is the obvious one. FA Cup final. Number, that's gonna be number one for me. The best technical goal was the Marseille goal. That is, like, there are very few players in the world who can score that goal. That is absolutely outrageous.
He scores that goal, how Jordan Henderson crosses.
Yeah, exactly. From that position, everyone else just first down crosses and he scores. It's outrageous how good
that goal
is. It's
still talked about on watch-alongs when anyone does that. It's just like that goal that Gerrard scored.
That's out of this world good. You know, a different one as well. I loved, remember the 4-0 against Everton when he scored the header from the corner?
Yeah.
I loved that goal. Because it was Gerrard once again just owning. I know he did it again later on. He scored the free kick, didn't he, again? But it was one of those moments where, like, it's a big game that Roberto Martinez and Everton have turned up and Liverpool are on a hunt for the league title and we fucking battered them.
Yeah.
And it started with, and it, like, how many goals did Gerrard score Ed in the corner? That'd be fascinating if we could find that out. I know of one, Everton, because he used to take the corners. So the fact that he was in the box, it was a deliberate plan for Liverpool to get him on the end of it. And the emotion when he runs over to Suarez and he's made up. I remember being at that game with Dan Kenneth and it was such an unbelievable moment.
One of my favourite ones is 2001 Manchester United.
Past Barthez.
From 30 yards.
And me, you and our mate Steve spent probably 2 weeks afterwards, every time we went to the park, trying to recreate that goal, and it is not possible because it is physics and biology defying. Because to normally get that amount of power, you need the ball out from under your feet. And he doesn't get the ball out from under his feet at all. It's so close to him to generate that power and that sort of backlift when the ball is about 6 inches in front of his foot. It's like Bruce Lee, one-inch punch type of thing that somehow you've managed to like soup yourself up and just ping it. And particularly because the context of being Manchester United, of us just being in their shadow for so long. And we'd had some good like smash and grab games against them, but all of a sudden you had Gerrard like coming up on the rails, Scouse Hero smashing shots in past them. That's got like that meant a lot to me. That goal.
A lot of it because the technical. There's difference between like favourites and technical. Because like some of them, the what is it, Middlesbrough?
I think it's
Middlesbrough
from
like
when
from
he chests
like,
it down.
A billion yards out on the right hand side. And it, like that is outrageous. That's unbelievable. And it was funny because watching that video you referenced before, and it just it's quite near the end, isn't it? Middlesbrough. I'm like, oh yeah, Gerrard's just scored from 70 yards out from the right touchline against Middlesbrough. Oh yeah, that's just another goal. It's unbelievable how good that one is. Like there's loads of the Newcastle free kick when the lad is it Lucas, you think, taps it to him.
Oh yeah, and he isn't, smashes
but
it.
He isn't ready because Lucas tries
he steps
to
back
he steps
first,
back because he's trying to get the wall to jump and then he oh okay I best just I run up there and put this and then I think he went and knocked the DJ out as well like, straight after it. So that's all right.
So there's allegedly
he got off with that one.
That one in particular, and it's funny because certain strikes that like look great from the TV camera angle and look a little bit worse when you start to put them in different ones. That Newcastle one is the perfect example of a TV angle strike. It's just arrowed. People don't score those goals anymore. That is a very mid-2000s
There's
goal.
A look and a feel to those goals.
Yeah.
The ball moves differently now. It moves too much. That's the difference. Whereas they could hit those ones straight. There was another one that was very, very similar that I actually preferred, which was the Southampton one. Because it's a muddy pitch as well. And it's like he picks the ball up just on the edge of the centre circle, shifts it 5 yards forward. He's probably 35 to 40 yards out and just arrows it into the top bin. Exactly the same. The ball just, it looks like it's been hit from a driver in golf. And it just goes like that into the top bin. You don't get those goals now. It's fucking beautiful.
So, yeah, that thing of, it was like a technique that existed for a little while, that like roll it.
John Anderson made a little bit of a career out of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely smashing it.
It was one of the things, again, in that they put it into Pro Evo, so you could press like L1 or whatever and have that happen, because it was the en vogue thing. It's like the draft excluder now, isn't it? Mm-hmm. How things are very much of their time in the Premier League. Like everyone trying the Roberto Carlos free kick in the late 90s. That thing is such an archetypal Gerrard hit of hitting something pure, straight as an arrow, flying in the top corner. And it's one of the things that he lost in toward the tail end of his career. Like the Thunderbolt, he just didn't have that for like the last probably 3 or 4 years.
I think that's your body.
Yeah.
I think that it's much easier to kill a ball when you're a little bit older than it is to strike.
I mean, the one
he'd
done against City late on past Joe Hart, it was kind of reminiscent, wasn't it? It was the Gerrard of old.
Yeah.
Was it a League Cup game? I think I can't remember. Felt him on
I think you
box.
Could do it from 10 to 15 yards out, a little bit older in your life, but I don't think 30, 40
well,
yards.
It's something Rafa Benitez said to me years ago about that it's groin. So the groins weaken as you get older, and that's where you can't generate that kind of power anymore. So we had to change his technique, and it was sad because it reminded me watching him score those of the last like 13, 14, where he tries to pull it back out, and he just doesn't have the muscle memory anymore because it's been that many years since he's had to do it, and so he has a late one on in the Chelsea game, and he puts it over the bar, and it goes nowhere near. And it's like that hit the hero moments of it all.
We haven't even mentioned like Olympiacos yet as well,
yes,
which is another
and Istanbul,
strike.
of course.
And the thing with like when usually a lad shoots from 30, 40, 50 yards, it's usually like a hit and hope. But with Steven Gerrard, it wasn't a hope. It was like, there's a very good chance he scores from this. Anyone else, if you're playing against the team, you'd be like, don't give a fuck. Anyone shoot from there. Like, if Kevin De Bruyne does it now, I'd rather Kevin De Bruyne shoot from 50 yards than be on the edge of the box playing these amazing what passes through. You know, you just would. With Gerrard, teams could not let him shoot. So they had to, because he was that good at it. Like, it wasn't hitting hope. It was an actual skill that he had. It wasn't just, I'm just going to belt this one and goes in. Because he did it so many. The Olympiacos goal, to go back, being in that stadium for that goal was, I'll never forget that as long as I live. It's up there with, like, I was right behind, because I was in the Anfield Road above the Olympiacos fans with my little brother, and it's just one of those that it was the second Neil Mellor headed the two and we knew he'd scored.
Yeah.
And like that doesn't happen. Everyone's cheering, everyone knows it's in. And obviously, people relate to it now through the commentary that what a hit. But I remember it from the stadium of my view, and I just remember, as soon as Carragher knocks it forward, Mellor nods it down, and everyone's like, oh my god, he's going to fucking score this goal. Everyone knew straight away because he's fucking Steven Gerrard.
The thing of it is the as well, because yes, it did in the stadium thing, absolutely, but the amount of iconic commentary moments that Steven Gerrard is responsible for, and the three that stand out is that is Olympiacos, you've got Newcastle with Andy Gray's yeah. top draw. In fact, no, it's a level above that, it's above the top draw, you know, he's got he's got that, and you've got Clyde Tilsley, hello, here we go for Istanbul. Absolutely, and even like again, the West Ham, you know, it's like stoppage time and all that kind of stuff. I mean, you mentioned it. Just remind me what you said. What's your favourite? If you were pressed,
because again, I was there, and that we didn't win the FA Cup. It was that simple. The lad, he couldn't walk, and there's no one else in the world. Again, go back to it. West Ham could head that ball out of that position to 500 different players, and they've won the FA Cup. But they knock it. If for some reason it falls to Steven Gerrard, and it's the fact it doesn't bounce. It bounces in the goal. It's just outrageous. And the moment in time, I mean, was you at that game?
I was managing a pub in one of the worst days of my entire life. But to the point, I was the most stressed I've ever been in work, trying to manage a bar while that game was on. So Liverpool, I've been conceding goals and I'm having nightmare after nightmare. The whole day is the worst it could possibly be, and for Gerrard to then rescue that, it was like, and being in a compact bar that could not have had more people in it, and erupting on that was a huge moment.
And it's like, that's like again, if you're going to lose a cup final, they're going to score off a cross, and there's going to be an own goal, and your goalie's going to make a mistake that loud. Like, that's how you lose cup finals. Like, fuck it, is that what we're going to do? And it was so hot. It was boiling, and no one could run. No one could even walk. That's why he has to shoot. So yeah, that if I was making my list of top five, that West Ham would be number one for me.
Yeah,
I think his first goal. I think it's, you know, for me, and I've never really thought about what his best goal was until today. And it's the way that he picks the ball up. He's never scored for Liverpool before. He played in Sheffield Wednesday. He dribbled past one man and then he shoulder feints for seconds and lets the ball roll past him. And that for me now is why it's probably my favourite is I've seen loads of people score the first goal to Liverpool and I've seen them go on to not achieve a lot of stuff. But for that first goal to go on and set the tempo for his entire Liverpool career and everything that he could become, like that for me, it was just what a perfect way to start it all.
I remember where I was when I watched that. I was just at home in the living room watching it on telly. But that feeling of, yeah, like, oh my God, he's a superstar. He's an absolute superstar. And it adds so much Michael Owen vibe to it. You know what I mean? Michael Owen, Argentina. We've got another one. Oh my God, we've got another one who can just walk through a team and score goals.
He shoulder fainted a Premier League centre-back.
Well, he sent it
to the floor.
Well, he sent
to the floor.
He sends Des Walker, the last one he goes past right at the end on his arse.
He was an England centre-back. He was a good centre-back, Des Walker. He's fast as fuck.
I got that feeling from the Man United Barthez one. I was like, oh my God, who is this fella? Like, he'd been around for a while and he'd been good.
I think I was at that game. I was outrageous.
And I was like, ah, yeah, this lad is special, because like that's Man United and they've got they are the best, and this fella's running rings around them, and by the way, he can score from near. Yeah, I remember being in the ground that one thinking, wow.
Two honourable mentions for Merseyside Derby at Anfield in, I think, 12-13.
Kick.
The left-footed.
Oh no! When he dinks it over, the key. The American goalkeeper. Yeah,
is that his hat-trick game?
Yeah.
Yeah,
that
was a good one.
Martin Kelly's involved in that, and then it breaks to him on the edge of the box, doesn't it? And he left foots it over them.
Yeah.
And Howard looks like he pulls his arms out the way, but I think it might have gone past. Yeah, it's a good goal there.
And
the other Derby one, when he runs into the box and then Goodison.
He does the ears.
Yeah,
sticks the tongue out. That is the moment when I talk about Scally Gerrard.
I was at that one as well. They were throwing coins at him. That's why he'd done it.
Yeah. I was skinhead Scally Gerrard, wasn't it?
Yeah, I was at that one as well. I was in the Everton stand for that one. You know, that was in the days when you could go to Derby and sit in the same stand as Everton, and they were giving him pelts as he was playing right wing, and then he gives it the tongue down the thing. Yeah, that was
that moment of, yeah, of you're at Goodison Park, you've given it the ears and decided that the ears aren't enough.
Tongue
you got to pull it. Oh, yeah, the pure skull magic.
I remember the hat trick one that used to sing the stuff, horrendous stuff out as kids, and he put the ball up a shirt and was doing all the suck on his form. Like, he loved giving it to Everton fans. Even that one I referenced earlier, the header with Gerrard, the Suarez one, he gives the Everton fans the thing before he goes. Like, you know, he done it recently when he was Villa manager, and they gave him a stick and he gave him a wave and stuff. Like, he always got the derby, Gerrard.
So I think by my count, we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 suggestions.
We should have done a top 10, shouldn't we?
Yeah, well, no, that's rubbish. We put a poll, or Dan put a poll out, which is we're going to have an ultimate winner via the Twitter poll. We had 2 semi-finals. He put Olympiacos, Middlesbrough, Aston Villa 2007. That was the other one I was free about kick. To mention. Is the free kick opening day of the season. The free kick is perfection.
It's ridiculous.
It's up and down. It's above the crossbar, and it comes down under the crossbar. Perfect.
I love goals in white kits as well.
It starts 5 yards out. When you see the view from behind him, and it's 5 yards away from the goal, and you're like, I know this goes into the very top corner here. How does that happen?
Yeah. Man United 2001, which is the one we've talked about. AC Milan 2005. Hello, here we go. Everton 2001. West Ham 2006. And Real Madrid 2009 is another game. That whole game.
Yeah, I don't think the goal was anywhere near as good as some of the others, but the occasion was one of the best.
Napoli's not on there. There's another thing. I'm going to put Napoli down as well.
Was Marseille on there?
Marseille is not on there.
That's a fucking unbelievable goal. That's ridiculous.
Okay, so your favourite goal is West Ham.
Yeah.
Your favourite goal,
Sheffield
Wednesday. I think West Ham might be my favourite. Might be my favourite goal. It's just impossible. It's an impossible goal.
It's not. You're deciding between what type of goal as well.
Oh God, yeah.
Sometimes you just look at it and go, "Oh, that one's slightly better than that," but they're all the same. Stephen Gerrard's got everything.
Yeah, exactly. I think Istanbul header's got to be in there.
Yeah,
because I mean, for a start, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. It's ridiculously stupid.
You don't score that, headers from there.
I think maybe we've got to think about it from this regard of like, can we almost get. So I have a definitive top five. It's like, what's his best long range strike? It's got to be West Ham because it's fucking 40 yards out and it's on the half volley and it's the
final. I would class his long range volleys and drilled shots as completely different long ranges. So I think you've got to have a Southampton or a Newcastle or a United long range.
Kyle Driver, 2001 United should be in this list, I think.
Okay.
West Ham, Istanbul.
The West Ham one I don't actually think is technically as good as the Middlesbrough one, to be honest. I don't.
It doesn't bounce, Chris. The Middlesbrough one is outrageous. I get it. It's brilliant as well. I'd love the Marseille
one
to be in it.
You know, you win a cup off the back of it. So it trumps the Middlesbrough one, I'll agree.
I think Biarcos as well. Oh my God, this is so hard.
So, West Ham, there's no particular order just yet. West Ham, FA Cup final. Istanbul, AC Milan header. Manchester United, 2001.
Sheffield Wednesday. I think maybe Southampton and Newcastle ones are better than the United one, but it's not against United.
Sheffield Wednesday.
It's his best dribbly goal.
It's his best that. And then does the Villa free kick, because it's a free kick?
Yeah.
Or do we put Newcastle as the free kick?
Newcastle could be the free kick.
We are doing the Marseille goal such a this
I don't even remember the Marseille goal.
It's the one where he crosses it into the top bin. No, Marseille, Jordan Henderson, the corner.
Yeah, let's just say it was a cross from Nav Dunn. And then we don't need to put it in.
There's so many goals. The Middlesbrough goal is stupid. I think the Middlesbrough goal is better than the Newcastle goal.
I just said that.
No, the Newcastle goal.
Newcastle.
I still think United's the best drilled one because of where the ball is. The ones that it's out in front of him that you're meant to go and whack that. This ball's there, and for some reason,
the Southampton one is a fucking shit pitch. It's fucking mud. He's 40 yards from goal, and it goes into the top bin.
It's stupid.
He's much further out. I drilled it further for longer.
Okay, so let's just say enshrined.
Okay, Istanbul.
West Ham.
They're the two enshrined.
Sheffield Wednesday?
That's a personal preference thing, and I'd understand it if you didn't like it.
I love that goal.
I mean, yeah.
So there's three. Cast. It's already on the tablet that we're going to bring down from on high here. Three of the five. Immutable. We've got two more slots left.
Okay. Jesus.
Yeah.
Olympiacos probably needs to be in this list, doesn't it?
It has to be. It has to be. I think it has to be.
Okay. So what we're saying then is we've got, for our last spot is between Manchester United, 2001, Newcastle,
Villa,
Marseille, Villa free kick.
I'd still throw Southampton into the mix.
Southampton.
Middlesbrough.
That's six,
one of the Evertons.
Oh, both the Evertons.
I think, okay, of all those goals, I think the Marseille one's the best, but I could be talked into the Middlesbrough one because it's outrageous how far out it is.
The volley from the bend.
One where he chests it down and then sort of touches it with the tip of his penis and then
volleys it down the corner.
And it goes, it's miles away and it bends like
Can we just put it up here in front of us just quickly so we can watch a couple of these back?
No,
I think it's important.
You can pick the fifth one. You're the host one.
I think you should both made a strong case. Are you happy with that?
I think the Middlesbrough one's sensational.
We're gonna. It's best, probably best not to think on. This is a bit like filling the lifeboats on the Titanic. This isn't it.
Yeah. Think about who you've saved, not who you've lost.
Exactly. Focus only on what we've managed to achieve.
Sorry, Marseille. Sorry, Everton goals.
Not what we've lost here. And may God have mercy on their souls, all those wonderful goals.
Fight for yourselves.
Who did we lose? We gained Marseille. Middlesbrough, that's fine. That's it.
We don't speak about it. So, of the five that we've got, West Ham.
Yeah.
Istanbul.
Yeah.
Sheffield Wednesday. Yeah.
It's like a who's who of Gerrard goals.
Middlesbrough.
Olympiakos.
Yeah. Use both like West Ham. I'd be comfortable going West Ham number one.
Okay, let's go bottom to top then. Number five.
It's outrageous that the goal against Olympiakos might be number five in this list.
I think Steve's right.
It's probably
I think it is.
It's not... God.
It's iconic, but
oh my God, the feelings though.
Are we talking technically or like the feels? Let's describe that. Don't say both because that doesn't help the situation.
But honestly,
right, what are they again?
Olympiakos,
yeah.
Middlesbrough,
Sheffield,
AC Milan, Sheffield Wednesday,
West Ham.
That's
West
the order. Olympiakos
five,
Middlesbrough,
AC Milan,
Sheffield Wednesday two, yeah,
over Olympiakos. I'd be putting Sheffield Wednesday probably fifth in this, if I'm being honest.
Okay, let's do that. Yeah,
Sheffield Wednesday fifth.
Doesn't matter to me.
Middlesbrough or Olympiakos fourth.
Because, right, the Middlesbrough goal is a better goal. The Olympiakos goal
is a better goal.
It hits me in the feels.
Yeah.
So let's put Middlesbrough four,
Olympiakos three,
Istanbul
two,
West Ham one. I can live with that.
I personally think Istanbul's two.
Okay. Yeah, I can't.
I'm judging it on the goal.
Yeah, I'm judging it on the feels.
No, but on the goal as well. He's on the edge of the 18-yard box and he headers a ball with no pace.
We should have done an equation.
I understand how it worked. I remember it.
No, but I'm just spelling it out just in case, because maybe it feels like you've forgotten how good a goal it was.
Maybe
the others are better.
He directs the header. He turns the ball to a completely on 45-degree, moves it on.
The others are better.
Far top corner.
I'm not debating it was a good goal, by the way. I'm not debating it was a good goal. I'm just saying.
The other one slaloms past Des Walker in Sheffield Wednesday.
It's definitely not the best goal in Champions League final history.
It's not, but it's not. It can't be far off.
It's not top three.
What I'd say is we should.
It's not as good as Zidane's.
We should have done a ranking of like mark out of 10 for how good the goal was, and then a mark out of 10 for feels.
He's not even got the best Scousers goal in Champions League final.
We should have done a mark out of 10 for the goal, a mark out of 10 for the absolute vibes of the goal, and then got a rating score.
Nah, that is right.
West Ham wins,
but we've been going for an hour and 40 minutes, so maybe we should do this before. This is the pre-planning.
It's nice that we talked about West. That's why West Ham's won, because it's 10 for the goal and 10 for the feels.
Yes,
Istanbul's like a 7 and a 10, little 17 mark. Olympiakos.
Oh look, 7. I wasn't going that low. I was going 8.
Olympiakos.
He's just give
technically
Istanbul 7 for the goal.
Oh no, sorry. Okay,
10 for the vibes.
Istanbul is a 10 out of 10 header.
Yeah.
There's only so much you can do with a header.
Yeah,
exactly.
There you go. We've
and the fact that he managed to do that.
Yeah,
we had a voice.
The only header that comes close in Liverpool history is Alisson Becker in terms of that.
I think a header's worth half as much as a fucking an unbelievable volley.
Okay, well,
so it's a 5 out of 5 header.
Horseshit, Chris.
But a 10 out of 10 volley.
heads and volleys literally gives you 1 point for a volley. And how much for the head? 2 points for the head. Double the amount of points, because it's much harder to score a header than it is to score with your feet.
So we have
football.
Yeah, but there's not like list. There's You've a big it, difference between a fucking P-roller and a fucking 40-yard volley. The headers are all the same. They're all just the same.
That is nonsense.
I take umbrage with your headers are all the same.
Nonsense.
I think it's honestly.
Sadio Mane, Aston Villa, Steven Gerrard, Istanbul.
Yeah, just a header.
Couldn't be
just
any more different.
Head,
couldn't
just
be any more
different.
Shut up. Right, that is our definitive list. Let us know yours in the comments. Do you agree or disagree? What are your thoughts on those that were left behind?
There were none left behind.
Yeah, good.
I don't know. Our elite mentality, they're gone.
Steven Gerrard's 181 goals have just disappeared into the ether.
Yeah.
Like Thanos clicked his fingers on them and they've all just floated away.
Yeah. If you enjoyed the debate as well, make sure you drop a like on the video. I'm always much appreciated. And we've got loads more debates on big things around Liverpool. We've got an entire series called The Debate Show on redmenplus.com. It's currently on hiatus, but we've got a great load of that in the archive on redmenplus.com. So make sure you get involved with that. Yeah, exactly. We had a super chat in amidst all of this from Trig Josh. Says, hi, Redman. Milner has been an important player for Liverpool in view of injuries. Should/are Liverpool be in the market for a versatile player to fill Milner's multifunctionality as replacement? Would Jordan... I don't know.
Jordan Henderson's dogging at right back.
Nor should he.
Yeah.
No.
We've kind of moved past it.
Calvin Ramsey helps.
I think five subs probably removes your need for a versatile footballer.
Point. Yeah, it's a good one.
Because you can have, all of a sudden we've got fullbacks on the bench, which we never.
When you can name nine subs, you don't have to worry about your fifth FM sloppy and guy who's got every slash next to his position.
My honest feeling on Jordan Henderson is, because if you remember the summer when his contract was up in the air, Atletico Madrid wanted him, and I think people would be shocked how many good football teams would want a piece of Jordan Henderson on the continent if he decided he'd had enough at Liverpool. You know, there's a lot of those like Italian and Spanish sides who would very much like Jordan Henderson as a midfield.
I think, to answer Josh's question, I think it's a combination of Joe Gomez and Jordan Henderson as a duo. Is that someone who can play a few different things in midfield and someone who can play right back and do another job somewhere else? Well, probably those two. Well, I'm not too sure about how.
I think he covers a DM, which is massive for us at the moment, because obviously
we haven't got
Talon Morton and your Bajcetic is probably aren't quite ready to step up into that role. So I think it's good to have someone who can tide you over until they're ready.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, cool. Brilliant. Thanks so much for that, Josh. Huge podcast this week. That was far longer than I ever dreamed it would be.
What she said.
It's right.
Not to me.
That was disappointing.
You gave it the big one, but you really didn't give it the big one.
I am thoroughly underwhelmed.
If you want an uncut version of this podcast where we chat about things that we would not normally dream of chatting on a public forum, then come and join us for Podcast Extra. It'll be live in about 10 minutes after this over on redmenplus.com. You can scan the QR code or you can head to redmenplus.com, sign up and get involved with that for video and podcast, as well as our whole incredible archive of documentaries, interviews and new shows each and every week, in addition to the free stuff we put out on YouTube. And also want to make mention, we've got a new live show on YouTube Sunday through Thursday, 9 p.m. Tuesday night is Chris Pajak.
Mr. Tuesday night.
First debut on the live show, Steve. It is on Monday night. I did mine on Sunday. I'm doing Thursday, Sunday this week.
I'm
Tuesday.
Also tossing up whether to just do a watch along tonight for the England game, to be honest, on my Todd. I might just do that as well.
Wow.
You be you.
Bold strides and thought moves.
Just need
forward.
To make sure Joe's got the capacity.
Joe's sat over this cornflake.
From doing what?
Good luck with that. Anyway, stay tuned. Make sure you subscribe to the YouTube channel. Click the notification bell if you want to be notified when we do go live, and that would be a big help indeed. Right, cool. We're going to have a wee, turn things around, and head back for Podcast Extra. Hope to see you over there and see you soon. Bye. If you want more, an extra Redmen podcast each and every week, but you're unsure what the best platform for it, well, the best platform is, of course, redmenplus.com. But if you are absolutely married to Spotify, if you cannot live without Spotify in your life, you can get the Redmen Plus podcast there now. Simply search for us on there, sign up through there, and you'll be able to access all of the new weekly podcasts from Redmen Plus directly in your Spotify app.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.